Hey, it's Canzano. I appreciate that you listen to the podcast. Make sure you subscribe and also leave us some feedback. Rate us. Give us a review. Thanks for listening. Hope you enjoy.
Initialize sequence.
Welcome to The Baldcast, a production of John Canzano's Bald-Faced Truth.
John Canzano. Raw. Sourced. Fresh. From the PacWest Center in downtown Portland, built by high-caliber millwrights, this is The Bald-Faced Truth.
Our next guest, NBA writer for CBS Sports. Stretch run of the NBA is on. Reed Forgrave joining us. Where are you today, Reed Forgrave?
I got home yesterday from Charlotte, North Carolina, so I am in my quite literally frozen igloo of a house that's covered in Minneapolis, Minnesota, that's covered by, like, I swear there's like a 3-foot ice pack on my roof. It's absurd. I don't know why I live here.
When I was living in the Midwest, I would always ask people, what happened? Why do you live here? Why does Reed Forgrave live in that igloo?
Got married, you know, you marry a Minnesota girl. You got to get closer to the in-laws. It's the same answer every time, isn't it? Like, it's not like I grew up in Florida. I'm from Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. So, but this is definitely an order of magnitude. I don't call it worse because some people chafe at that. Some people apparently like winter, but it's an order of magnitude colder and longer.
Reed Forgrave is with us. What was memorable for you in Charlotte for All-Star Weekend?
Getting in Ubers and shuttling back and forth for 6-minute interviews with players all over the city. That was kind of the most, but that's what I'm going to remember for it. I'm not sure if that qualifies as memorable. Exactly. I thought the slam dunk contest, I don't know how it played on TV in the arena. Those events are always so weird because it's like people want to be there, but they don't really care. So you have this sort of like a dead atmosphere for the game and for the event, but like, I thought the slam dunk contest, even with, you know, Dennis Smith, like, missing 6 dunks before he would make one, an incredible dunk. I thought the slam dunk contest was awesome. I thought John Collins didn't get nearly the respect that he should have deserved, frankly, during this entire NBA season. And then to come out there and really put on a show, I was really impressed by him. And then I thought Hamidou Diallo was electric. I mean, I remember seeing him in practices when he was a redshirt at Kentucky, that one year where he did like sort of like a half-season redshirt. And the dude is just, I don't know if he's going to be an actual basketball player, but he is such an incredible athlete. And to see the showmanship that he came out with on that Shaquille O'Neal dunk, like where he pulls out the Superman shirt yep. while he's hanging from the rim, it was incredible. It was awesome. So that, to me, was my favorite moment of the weekend with Steph's bounce pass to Giannis for the alley-oop as a very close runner-up number 2.
Yeah, I was watching that stuff, and I was like, how much fun. I like when I see the players having fun because they get to do it only once a year, and people are saying, well, that was a travel, and I'm saying you're watching for the wrong reason if you're calling travel on that.
Exactly. I mean, and you're watching for the wrong reasons if you're actually complaining about defense. I mean, they don't play defense. Like, it's not what it's for. It's a show. I mean, these All-Star weekends they're competitive for a very different reason than actual basketball games are competitive. They're competitive for the entertainment spectacle of it. And frankly, like, I love defensive battles when teams are really getting after it in Game 7 of the playoffs. That's not what I want to see in the middle of February on just like an exhibition game. Look, the level of basketball is not high-level basketball by any means, but it is high-level showmanship. And that's why we tune in. That's why we pay attention.
And I think it's like people going to a Globetrotters game and going, well, that's not legal. Yes. You know, you're there for the show. Exactly. It's a performance.
I mean, and these are things that my 6-year-old kid doesn't care about sports, period. But we took him to a Globetrotters game a year ago, and he loved it. He absolutely loved it. It's the only time he's ever enjoyed a sporting event for anything more than, like, the cotton candy man that's coming near him or the cheerleader standing in front of him. My 2.5-year-old might be into, eventually, those defensive battles. He might be the type of guy who enjoys a 2-1 baseball game for all the subtle reasons. But everyone loves the Globetrotters. And that's exactly what not just the game, but all of All-Star Weekend is. It's not only partially about basketball. It's more about basketball culture.
Reed Forgrave, NBA writer, CBS Sports, is with us. All right, the winning team, the players got $100,000 each for winning this game. That's not much of an incentive when you talk about guys that are making a couple $100,000 per quarter during their NBA regular season games. If we wanted this game to matter to the players, the outcome, and you and I are in charge of this, Reed, let's kick around some ideas. How do we make it matter to these guys?
I mean, my honest reason is, or my honest answer is, I'm not sure if it's ever going to matter, like the actual game, because so much media stuff is packed into this weekend, so much partying, so much, you know, this is when they actually get to enjoy a little bit more of their stardom. I'm not sure if the game itself is ever going to matter. I mean, what baseball did, I mean, does the baseball All-Star game really matter more just because the winning league gets home field advantage?
Silly.
I don't know. I don't get the sense that it really does. Like, they tried something. I think this matters. I mean, the end of the games matter. There's a little bit of pride tied up into it. I don't know if I like the Team Giannis versus Team LeBron instead of East versus West. But if it was East versus West, you know, the way the power balance in the league is right now, I'm not sure if it would make all that much of a difference. Maybe if it's like, hey, we the league are going to build a $20 million school in the hometown of the team captain, you know, Akron versus Athens, right? Maybe that would matter, but probably not. I mean, you guys, I think it's fine that it doesn't matter because, like, first of all, like, we're going to say, oh, this is awesome that all of a sudden the All-Star game matters and the players are given their 100%. We're going to say that until our team's star player breaks an ankle in an All-Star game because he was trying to, right, you know, dunk on Giannis, and then he's out for 2 months and misses the playoffs. Like, I'm not sure if that's what these games are ever built for, whether it's NBA or Major League Baseball or NFL or anything.
Damian Lillard had a strong performance. A lot of people in Portland were proud of his performance in this game. He said after that he felt like he fit in, and I think that's such an interesting thing for Lillard to say. Did he look to you like a guy who belonged on that court?
Yeah, 100%, man. I mean, not just because he came in to get three threes in a row. I mean, he was the reason that Team LeBron, I can't remember which teams, right, that he was on, because like, these things like pass so quickly. He was the reason that team made a comeback, because he just absolutely lit it up. And, yeah, I mean, I don't think it took that All-Star game to realize that Dame belongs among the elite of the elite in this league. I mean, for people who were paying attention to what happened to the Blazers last season in the second half when they were the second hottest team in the NBA other than the Utah Jazz, it was because of Damian Lillard, not just out there being a star, but being a legit superstar, a legit MVP candidate. When I think of that guy, look, I think of him for all the reasons that everyone else thinks of him, an incredible shooter, you know, one of the top 10 players in the NBA by my accounting. But I also think of him as an absolute assassin. Like, he's the guy. I'm trying to think if there are many other players in the NBA that I'd want with the ball in their hands in the waning moments of a game when you need a bucket. I mean, maybe Steph Curry, maybe LeBron, but there aren't many others that I'd want more than Damian Lillard. And that, to me, in games that matter, that says more than anything, than any, you know, three-pointers in a flurry in an All-Star game could ever make.
We're talking to Reed Forgrave, CBS Sports, on the NBA. Lillard's contract is a year behind Anthony Davis's, meaning he has a year more than Davis on the deal. I think it made some people nervous when Davis came forward with the trade demand, Lillard, you know, being, are we a year away from Lillard wanting out? I want to play something that he said to Chris Haynes on a podcast. He's talking about not being willing to sell himself out to try to win. Listen to this, Reed, because I want your reaction.
So, I mean, for reasons like that, you know, I'm just like, man, I'm more, I guess, into, you know, where I am as a person, you know, the relationships and the impact that it could have on people. I think a lot of people would tell you, you know, just because they go and they win a championship, it's like, oh, we won a championship. And then they look back and they like, man, this happened because of that. This happened because of that. Like, well, my career is over, I'm going to know the relationships that I'm going to have. I'm going to know the people who knew I was solid with them, regardless of if I was at the top or if I controlled all this stuff, that I did it the right way. And I took people's situations and their families and what could be into consideration before I just made a decision based off, all right, this is what would be best for me. This is what people want to see me do. I'm just like, you know, whatever. So
that's deep. I ain't never heard it like that before. Like, you know, you're looking out, you asking out would affect a lot of other people.
So it's like I'm saying, I do want to win a championship, but it's other stuff that means more to me.
Got you. I understand.
It's almost like I'm not willing to sell myself out for,
I hear you.
For that.
I hear you.
To, instead of impact.
I've never heard you put it like that before.
All right, Reed Fargrave, you hear Damian Lillard saying that. Is that different? Is that a different tune than we've heard from other stars in the league?
Absolutely. I'm just like, I hear that. I'm like, I want that guy on my team for reasons other than just he's a hell of a basketball player. Like, first of all, that's character, right? Like, you look at, I mean, say what you will about Kevin Durant chasing championships or Anthony Davis chasing championships. That's totally their prerogative. And I think both of those guys are good and decent human beings. But to hear Dame say that, yeah, I mean, I think that's incredible. That's such a high character move. Let me posit something to you for just a sec. LeBron James, a guy who has, you know, directed his career, it hasn't asked to be traded, but he's very much been like, I'm going where the championship is. He has known since he was a little kid that he was going to be an absolute star. Anthony Davis, look, he shot up in high school, height-wise, but he's known since the moment he went to the University of Kentucky, he was going to be a max-level player, one of the best players in the NBA. Paul George goes to Fresno State. There's maybe a little bit of perspective that comes with that, and could, I think, explain one reason why he said, hey, this Oklahoma City thing, this is good for me for reasons that are a little bit different than everyone else wants to put in me. Damian Lillard goes to Weaver State, not the most lauded guy in the recruiting process, but there's a little bit of perspective that comes with that. If they go and miss the playoffs the next 2 years, I'd start to get worried. If things take a turn for the worse for the franchise, which this feels like a very stable franchise, notwithstanding the ownership situation, however that plays out over the coming months and years, this feels like a very stable franchise. I don't see that sort of stuff happening. So I think if you are a Blazers fan, you got to take a lot of solace in those words because it's real. I live in a quote-unquote small market here in Minneapolis. We dealt with the same thing with Jimmy Butler. And Jimmy Butler, frankly, fits the definition of the type of player that I was just describing, a guy who wasn't always thought of to be a superstar. But, you know, you get that wall plug in your ear, and apparently that changes your tune a little bit. So as long as Dame doesn't become really good friends with Mark Wahlberg, I think y'all should be pretty good.
All right.
If you see him hanging out with, like, Mark and Donnie, it's trouble. It's trouble, trouble, trouble. Watch out.
Before I cut you loose, Reed Fargrave with us, CBS Sports. Who do you like right now in the East and the West? Give me your two best picks in the West. Give me your two in the East. Who's playing in the conference finals?
Yeah, the West is the hardest one. I think it's even harder than the East. It's the Warriors and someone else. I don't know who that someone else is. If you had to, and please don't do this, but if you had to put a gun to my head, I think I'd pick the Thunder.
Me too, Reed.
I don't feel sure of that at all. I mean, plenty of people would say the Rockets. Part of me wants to say the Jazz, even though, if the Jazz had gotten Mike Conley, I'd be saying the Jazz right here. I think the Nuggets are really interesting, but the Thunder, they play hard. I worry about Russell Westbrook's, you know, quietly, it's masked by the stats. And he's having his, like, least efficient year since, I think, his second season. Like, his shooting numbers are awful. So I worry about that. But if I had to pick one, I'd pick the Thunder. I feel strangely a lot more sure about the Eastern Conference. I get that there's four teams that are battling for it. But to me, the Bucks and the Raptors, specifically the Raptors, are just a cut above, just one cut above the Sixers and the Celtics. Who are your teams in the East? Like, I like the Raptors a lot. They are my pick to make the NBA Finals and losing four games to the Warriors. I think that they have, I don't know if they've distinguished themselves. I just like their potential more. They're really switchy and versatile and just have a lot of different pieces. Who are your picks in the East?
I like teams that can guard. And so I agree with you on Oklahoma City being that other team in the West because they guard. And I think in the playoffs, that's look, Blazer fans, let's be real. This Blazers team's a lot of fun, but it doesn't guard. And that becomes a problem in the playoffs. And in the East, I'm with you. I like the Raptors, and I do think it's a knockout in the finals.
Yeah, it's got to be, right? And I mean, I do think those Bucks, I mean, they're the number one defense in the NBA. They're the best net rating in the NBA. I get that, like, my worry with the Bucks is very different than my worry with, the team was, like, just talking about my worries with, the Thunder. With the Bucks, it's like they're so reliant on the three, and we saw what happened to the Houston Rockets in the conference finals last year, over 27. But Giannis and the force, and Budenholzer is a hell of a coach, and they added a nice decent trade deadline. So, we're going to talk to in the East. It'll be fun. I think those Eastern Conference playoffs are going to be absolutely ridiculous.
Reed Forgrave, you're the best. Thanks for joining us.
You're the best.
You're in your igloo, though.
That's the worst.
What do you do? Do you have any like cold weather? Because we get a snowstorm and everything just stops. And I'm talking about a half inch of snow, by the way. Everything just stops. You live in it. Like, are you ice fishing? What do you do?
Yeah, I mean, I've been ice fishing once. It's just like basically drinking on a lake. One thing I didn't know that even existed until I moved here is something called a roof rake. So I spent like a half hour yesterday raking snow off my roof because we know that later tonight we're going to get another 8 inches of snow and we might have our two young kids running around the house again tomorrow. Like we did a couple weeks ago when we had 4 snow days in a row and it was like negative 60 degrees. And you can't leave the house. So it's like, you're just ready to like throw it back. By day 4, I was ready to throw like both of my kids out the window, just be done with it. Like by day 5, I'm like, we're celebrating. They go back to school. I'm like, we're celebrating by going somewhere really fun. We're going to Chuck E. Cheese and dad's going to drink several beers. I didn't know they cut you off after 2 beers of Chuck E. Cheese, but I guess it makes sense. Yeah, man, you drink and you hope that it ends sooner than April 15th, like it did last year when we got 2 feet of snow on April 15th. Oh, send help, John! Send help!
We'll send you some socks and hand warmers. Reed Forgrave, thank you, man.
All right, thanks, brother.
There he is from his igloo. We went up to Mount Hood on Sunday. We took the 4-year-old and the 2-year-old, and we got the little not the ski pass, but the inner tubing. Did the tubing. You ever done that, Peter?
For a long time. It's a blast when you're a kid, though.
Yeah. And when you're a grown-up and you got a 4-year-old and a 2-year-old, I got to be honest, I didn't get to do what I wanted to do on that mountain. But the funny thing in our household is, and by the way, they have evolved the tubes to the point, like, so far. It used to just be bring your own, right? Get on a hill. Then it was, hey, we have the tubes for you, and we'll charge you, like, $15 to come use our tubes. Now, they not only have the tubes, but they have the tubes grouped in twos and fours and single tubes, and they've got coverings on them with handles, and they have a conveyor belt at the bottom of the hill. So you go down the hill, you go tubing, and you get off. And part of the tubing experience years ago was you had to carry that damn tube up the hill. Like literally a leg workout. Your legs are burning. Now you just stand on the conveyor belt and it carries you and the tube and your whole family back to the top of the hill. A lot of people brought their dogs out there. I had not seen that before. Because the dogs are like, this is a pretty good tubing experience. I can get on the conveyor belt. This isn't so hard. And the other thing was the 2-year-old in our household is a stunt woman. She has no fear. The 4-year-old is very cautious. She is always assessing risk. Like, I could see the 2-year-old literally growing up and being like, you know, a downhill alpine skier, okay? And the 4-year-old being a actuary who specializes in risk management or whatever. So we get this 4-tube contraption. It's me, Anna, and the 2 little ones. The 2-year-old wants to ride in the front tube, okay? Like, that's a 2-year-old kid is like, no, I need to sit in the front because I can get maximum velocity while I'm sitting in front. The 4-year-old is like, I'm not so sure I even want to be on this tube. And so we put her in the spot in front of me, and the whole way down the hill, I'm having to reassure her. It's okay. We're doing great. We're doing great. Fun was had by all, but But literally, like Christmas morning, where you go all out and you buy things for your kids, back me up, parents, and then the kids play in the cardboard box. Literally, the day ended with us taking maybe three trips down the hill and the four-year-old going, I just want to go play over here in the snow. And that's what we ended up doing for the day. Still was a good day and a lot of snow on that mountain. Leave it here. Coming up, Punch It Audio, best sound from all around, next. I'm more of a warm weather person. I got to be honest with you. Even when we went up to the mountain, Mount Hood, what's it called? Mount Hood Meadows or whatever that's called. Ski Bowl, Inner Tube Bowl, whatever the case is. I got to be honest with you. I am a warm weather person. I am. I just am. I lived in cold weather. I lived in Fort Wayne, Indiana, where you would drive by the shopping mall and it would, like, the sign outside would be flashing 5. And, you know, it was like 5 degrees. And I'd go into the mall and I'd walk around and I'd be like, I don't want to go out. I don't want to go back outside. It's so cold out there. I tried to go running once in that weather. I don't think it's possible. And it's just so damn cold. It hurts. Everything hurts. My face hurt. My ears hurt. My lungs hurt. Couldn't do it. I go into the gym. But the whole thing, the whole point, though, with that weather is, like, look, people, we get a hard time in this part of the country for the rain, but if it rains, you could still live your life. Like, you may complain about, oh, people don't know how to drive in the rain, but have you seen people drive in the snow? That's bad. But I just remember being in that cold weather and just, like, dreaming about warm weather. And I'll be honest, the basketball season ended that I was covering Indiana basketball. And the next day, I got in my car in Indianapolis, and I just started driving south. And I was like, how far do I have to go south on this interstate before I hit decent weather? And it turns out I was in Alabama when it got warm. I went all the way to Florida. And I was like, this is what I need after the season's over, because I have had it with being in 3 feet of snow. And you learn things in the snow. You know what you learn? You learn that there were inventions that we had no idea about. People had electric blankets for their cars. There was a little device people had on their key rings that I eventually bought that your lock would freeze on your car. You couldn't get into your car. The snow shovel's an easy one. Like, you assume you need a snow shovel when it snows. But I had no idea it was a thing. How many people had heart attacks shoveling snow? Like, that was a thing. Like, how did Fred die? Fred was shoveling snow. I was like, Mother Nature. Mother Nature, you are an evil mistress. But you had to be in shape to be living in the snow. You don't think about being in shape. You don't look at, like, igloos and Eskimos and think those guys are in shape. But I guarantee you those guys are in shape. I'm telling you. No wonder they're huddled in that igloo. That's no way to live, people. That's no way to live. But we get a hard time. People say to me, how do you live in all that rain? And I'm like, have you been to the Midwest when it snows? How about the East? How about, like, when we watch, like, in the winter storm, you turn to that storm channel, weather channel, in the winter time, and you see, like, Buffalo. And you're like, whose bad idea was living in Buffalo? You had a choice. Like, literally, you're not required to live where you live. Like, so if you don't love it here, you can just pick up. You can go somewhere where you love it. You can go live in Phoenix. You can go live. But I'm telling you, there are problems with weather just about everywhere that I can think about. Even Phoenix has got a problem. It's called 118 in the summer. It's called the face of the sun. So, you know, I like warm weather better than cold. I don't prefer the cold. I like to visit the cold weather. I like to visit the snow. I like to drive up to the snow. But my wife loves being in the snow. Like, she's like, oh, looking up at the mountain, like, hey, I need to be skiing. And my kids are, like, playing in the snow. And I got to be honest with you, the whole time I'm going, this is great. This is a great family time. But I cannot wait till we get into the car and we're driving home and we're headed back towards somewhere warmer than this. And it's literally, it was like 25 degrees on the mountain. It's still cold to me. And I can remember, growing up, my parents used to take us to the snow, and this is probably why I am the way I am. because, and I realize the responsibility I have with my own children based on this story. But when I was a kid, we didn't have proper snow gear. There was four kids in the family. We didn't have a lot of money. So it wasn't like my parents were buying us all snow boots and snow pants and gloves and hats and jackets. We weren't doing that. My kids are spoiled rotten. They've got snow pants that fit them. They've got boots that fit them. They've got gloves. They have multiple options and accessories. I had jeans on when I went to the snow. I had tennis shoes on. And I eventually figured out, well, if I take a plastic bag and stick my foot in it before I put my foot into the shoe, at least my foot will stay dry in that shoe. That's my snowshoe. It was a plastic bag. Try to tell my wife that. She's like, what's wrong? No wonder. We got cold. Our hands just got so frozen you couldn't feel it. So that's probably why I don't have positive associations with the snow. Do you have a positive association with the snow, Peter?
I enjoyed it, but never for long periods of time. I was the same as you. I would go as far as I would rock some mittens. But otherwise, yeah, jeans, t-shirt, get out there for 20 minutes and I'm done.
My jeans would just be frozen to me. They'd be soaking wet and frozen, like stuck to me. And my feet never so cold. Never so cold. That's why. She goes, you want to go to the mountain? I'm like, yeah, let's go. This will be fun. All right, leave it here. Punch It Audio. Best sound from all around now.
We interrupt this broadcast with a special announcement from the Bald Face.
Hey, sorry to interrupt the podcast, but if you want to listen to more of the Bald Face Truth Radio Show, including more of this segment that you're listening to, make sure you subscribe on SoundCloud and iTunes to the Bald Face Truth Radio Show. Thanks for listening.